You're set?
All set, Dan.
Okay, let's call a meeting for January 28th, 2013, to order. David, would you please take the roll call?
Yes, I will. Chairman Christensen?
Here.
Commissioner Demarest?
Here.
Commissioner Dirksen? Commissioner Rodman?
Here.
Commissioner Sherwin?
Here.
And Commissioner Tuttle is absent.
I remember Diane mentioned last week that she wouldn't be here tonight. And then I talked to her today also. She was staying the other side of town. She wasn't going to come across tonight.
Need the snow for you.
Yeah. Okay, this is the time we set aside for comments from citizens. Anybody in the audience have a comment that is not on tonight's agenda? No hands? Anybody? Okay. Approval of minutes from October 15th, 2012. They've been revised. Any comments?
I had a question on those, Mr. Chairman. My recollection was that, yes, there was a correction needed on these minutes with regard to who was in attendance, but I thought that we had just moved on them and that there was another set of minutes that needed more substantive correction. Is my recollection totally mixed up? Does anyone else have anything similar?
Yeah, I think I remember that also.
Yeah, there was quite a bit of discussion about the December 10th minutes, but and the motion we had at the end of those minutes was that I believe it was you, Dave, who voted made a motion to approve, and the motion was to approve as amended or as discussed. I initially thought too that it was coming back again, but they were approved as amended. Or as they would be amended.
Well, if that's the case, so be it. Because certainly, I would not have suggested or thought that we would have brought these back just for a correction on who was present and with his staff. But
The 15th was specifically tabled to come back.
I think
the corrections are in italics.
Sure made
additional information in italics.
There's a couple things on these revised minutes that I wanted to comment on. If we're going to discuss the October 15th minutes.
Yeah, that's what we're discussing now. Okay.
On page 3, second paragraph down, there's a math error. I'm not sure it's that germane, but it is 216 times 3,000 doesn't equal 840.
648 perhaps?
Something of that nature. If it's 3,000. Then down in Emmett Lane's comments, Mr. Lane is a builder and understands the importance of mitigation fees. He also believes low fees are important to builders to start new projects. And this is more important than supporting the schools. I don't think that's exactly what he had to say. That sounds a bit harsh. To my recollection, I don't know if we need to consult with him, but I just want to make that comment.
We will amend, for the official record, amend this paragraph.
Well, I just thank you for bringing the attention to the italics. I focused in on the insertion as represented next to by the bar, next to staff present, and I'm glad to pick up on the italics, but no, I stand corrected.
Any other comments? we want to have these corrected and brought back, or how do you want to handle this, commissioners?
I move that we approve them subject to the minor corrections and... So we don't have to bring it back again.
Moved by Commissioner Sherwood.
Second.
The acceptance with minor corrections as commented on. Seconded by Commissioner Rado. All favor?
Discussion.
Or any discussion?
Is the correction of Mr. Lane's statement a minor correction if we don't know what he said?
I think we can include my comment. I don't know, is it never been in that position, preparing to consult someone who came and gave testimony? Is there a procedure or precedent for that?
We can check the, since these have been prepared in this form, we can check the tape and correct as we find in the recording. We're going to talk more about minutes at the end of, in our discussion at the end of the meeting.
Okay. Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Opposed.
You opposed?
I'm opposed.
Okay. Okay, opposed by Commissioner Demarest. We don't have a public hearing, so we'll just move on to workshops. Signed for amendment ZCA 2012-04. Paul?
Okay. Tonight, we included four attachments in the packet based primarily on material we've discussed in the past. Those are the table, the latest version of the table that we had at our last meeting, of the proposed code and how it's been translated into this table. The chapter, code chapter 1880, that we had some, I think just, we had we went through it fairly quickly at our last meeting, the entire chapter. The other is something you've seen quite a bit in the past, the illustration of sign types. And the last one, which I don't know if we're really getting into tonight, are the sign design guidelines. That's the attachment four. So tonight, what I'd like to do is go through this table and the code chapter, but under the basis that the way we approach this, we've not had time to really do a detailed review of these materials. Mark was the guy, the lead for this project. And since we've lost Mark, I have not had time to pick this up. I don't think Jeff has either to really go through in detail and come up with a staff position on and review on all these items. So what I'd like to do is to go through this material to see what comments or questions or observations you have. Some we may be able to answer or comment on, others we'll just track and bring them back at our next meeting for clarification or for some kind of a distinct response. But what I'm most interested in is getting your thoughts tonight, especially in the table and the code chapter, so that we can get closer to finalizing this. We have a meeting on February 11th. I had originally thought about a public hearing on the 11th, but we did not make the deadline. It's quite a long deadline ahead of the date to publish notice. So we will have a public hearing on February 25th.
I think it said 28th.
28th, according to the staff report.
25th. Okay. So I think that we need to get public input and then form our board recommendation.
Yeah, I was just curious if
there's plans to refill Mark's position, and if so, would it be in a manner timely enough to allow a staff person to do a thorough edit of this in a timely manner that would keep the process moving forward and meet whatever deadlines we have in regards to moving it over to the council?
We are going to seek to fill that position. We'll probably advertise beginning this week. It's going to take a couple of months to fill that slot. I'd rather not delay this. It's for whoever comes on board, it's going to take a while to come up to speed, and that person may or may not have direct experience that would be helpful with this. But in the interim, we're going to make the time to go, Jeff and I in particular, to go through this in detail and get a staff understanding and confirmation and up or down on everything in here. And that said, I don't think the commission wants to get into absolute nuts and bolts. We're talking about 30 versus 32. What I'm interested in is your thoughts or any specific concerns. But there's a few larger level issues to be dealt with, and I made a list of the two or three things that I want to bring to your attention. But I'd really like to begin working through this. And Tom Beckwith will be back with us at our next meeting. We're going to extend his contract to get some more of his time involved in this as well, since we're short a staff member.
Thank you.
A few things that I had on my mind. One is in relation to the downtown sign coding. And going through being comfortable with whether the downtown sign guidelines we have now are sufficiently covered in this if we choose to delete the downtown master plan sign guidelines section and incorporate them into this effort. That's one area that we need to check. And there was another minor one that Tom brought up last time about minimum maximum ratios of the sign area to the frames, that you don't have a very small sign in a huge frame or in a huge structure. And that's something that staff take a look at. And I agree that there does need to be some control over that ratio, so we have a sign that is primarily a sign with not a lot of area of embellishment. Example might have been that sign that could legally have been put up at North Kelsey, and the project didn't go through, but it was, I think, 22 feet wide, 35 feet tall, with a very small sign piece at the very top. That was due to a loophole in the code.
Very small what?
Pardon me?
I missed that. Very small what?
Very small sign at the top of the pylon. That was due to a unintended consequence of it was meeting the code requirement. But that's a smaller detail. But a couple other quick things. Human signs, we don't regulate them now, and I believe maybe we should regulate human signs as to where they can be and how long and so forth. As a possibility. Sandwich signs. A-frames. Portable signs are now allowed in virtually every zone. Not residential, but public, open space, limited open space, office, downtown commercial, general commercial, service commercial, both industrial zones, light industrial and general industrial, and the mixed use up and down West Main. What this code proposes is that they will be eliminated in professional office, in general commercial, in service commercial, and both industrial zones. So they're really relegated or limited to more of the pedestrian level, West Main, downtown, and the open space area, which is primarily for things like special events. So So that's something specific that I happen to agree with. So there's such a proliferation of sandwich signs as to how the commission feels about that. Yeah, the last one I have is that this the code at present is recommending that we do not allow murals. And that subject has come up. The question being whether we do not, whether we prohibit murals, not murals as signs, but murals. I know that they just uncovered an old sign on the, what would be in the west wall of the old M&M Antiques building downtown on Main Street. Lawns. Must be from the 20s, 30s, 40s. It's no one remembers.
It's not covered again.
Oh. Is it?
Yes.
They're covering it over right now. Yeah.
Whether we would continue to allow murals. We've had issues in the past, and part of Tom's point was that mural, when do you just differentiate between a mural and when does it become a sign? If it's distinctly advertised in the business. But that's another thing on my list. So with that, I'd like to just turn over to the commission. We have the table, we have the code, we have the four attachments available to put up on the screen, and I'd like to go through and ferret out any questions or concerns.
I have a question as to talk about murals a little bit, as to why we wouldn't, if they do not advertise anything per se, why would we want to not allow murals? And I consider it art, and I think it's, yeah, it kind of beautifies the rather. It could otherwise be an ugly side of a building.
Yeah. I can see something on that mural, though, that you should have some control over, because you don't know what's going to go up there. It could be something real obnoxious, or it could be something real nice.
Yeah, but it could be something allowed in the code that says, yeah, as long, yeah, as you, right, keep it.
As long as you keep it.
You know, to,
yeah,
to art, mm-hmm, rather than.
So it's being suggested that we regulate taste?
No, I'd say we keep it art.
And I'd be a little facetious.
A little. I think if you keep it to art rather than to advertising, then I think that's fine.
And I think that was the perspective with which Tom had approached it. We not try to regulate murals per se, which is why it's now taken out of the proposed language.
So I think you had concerns about, or issues about the art itself, and there's not a specific body that regulates what is essentially public art.
Mm-hmm.
There are many things that have a very strong and required public art program, and they have art review commissions, but
depends on what kind of art they're going to put up to sometimes.
And we don't regulate taste, we don't regulate content. But I think it may have unintended consequences for certain locations.
Yeah, I suppose.
Either way.
But it could kind of gray if you could have a statue, I suppose, a figure or something that could end up in the same thing, that, is it art or is it not?
Sure.
Yes, Jeff?
There's a mural on Eddie's Trackside and then on Napa. Do you know if permits were required for either of those? There's a somewhat reason. I mean, they're not real buildings.
I don't know.
Okay.
We'll find out.
I think the concern both ways is certainly legitimate. And yet, I think that without the benefit of some sort of review board, I think it's really tough to leave it up to staff to say, well, gee, that one was good and that was not.
Yeah, I can understand the reluctance to have it in there and just say, okay, it's out of their regulatory code there, so.
Of course, there is one other one. There's one coal sign down there on the laundry building across from the liquor store that's kind of a historic sign that's been there for many years. That would be called advertising too for, you know, so. I don't know.
Yeah. Jeff?
Is, maybe there's something staff can glean from the continuum of events having to do with the barbecue place and the pigs over in Stonewall, because I thought there was some court rulings that made some statements about exactly what we're talking about. Couldn't have naked pigs, and the man take out the pigs, and then the court said, I think it's okay to have the naked pigs, and put them back. But there may be something to glean out of that would be instructive to us on how to proceed. That's very recent.
Some people's mind, that was an issue of obscenity, wasn't it?
Yeah. I never saw a pig with clothes yet.
And our code does talk about obscene type material.
Do we have any precedent as to what other communities, how they handle murals and such as murals?
I think there are a number of communities that do regulate murals. Where I came from, there were regulations about murals, but they also had an art review commission. We can have Tom check into how they are regulated, that may remove some of the angst about potential issues with murals. And we can give some thought to how it would be regulated and what the approval process would be.
Yeah.
I think in most cases it would be, as few as there may be, it may be a very simple exercise for staff to do the review and approval. But there may be a case where it becomes a problem in that staff does not approve.
Right.
Certainly the applicant can appeal up to the council or hearing examiner for a decision.
Yes.
And I think that would be beneficial, Paul. I would be inclined with regard to this issue to err on the side of less, recognizing that I think we need to define it within the sign ordinance and make clear that if it's not advertising a location, either where it's at or in the form of off-premise advertising, if it is in fact in the eye of the common beholders, whatever that is, art, historic perhaps, some sort of basic definition and limitation, with, as you say, an approval process by staff with an appeal right, and stop there. I mean, I think if you try to go to somewhere between that and the design review board, you might as well go to the review board. So look, that'd be my 2 bits on it.
Jeff, anything else? Yeah, let's see what you can come back with on that. And on the mural. And if we did take it out, the murals that we have in town would they be grandfathered?
Yeah, they would be.
Okay.
If the building was damaged or burned down over, say, a certain percentage, they probably couldn't restore it back.
Okay.
If they were not alone.
Yeah, if the murals were not allowed, as far as science, right?
But I think it's important to note, my impression would be that if we take it out and don't address it in the ordinance, murals are fine.
Because we would be choosing to not regulate them in any way. As long as it wasn't a sign, as in advertising.
As long as it wasn't a sign, it's simply true.
For instance, the one on the side of the Florian store, the fish, the stream scene, clearly that's not a sign for anything. It's, in my mind, it's art, it's a mural, and it's not addressed in any way in the ordinance. Someone can go in and do that on a dozen buildings in town. And we could have a theme.
Yeah.
So just to keep that in mind, I think.
And the one on the Napa store does have Napa, the old Napa store.
In a historical context.
Yeah.
So is that art or is it advertising?
In the eyes of the beholder, I suppose. What was the other one? There was several.
Well, I just brought up, and this is really more in relation to staff getting into the code a little bit further, but how it covers the downtown guidelines, whether the new guidelines as a part of this one single code as opposed to two or three or four different codes like downtown or North Kelsey, whether this code sufficiently incorporates the guidelines we have now for downtown.
Dave?
And downtown is currently split into three different components, isn't it?
Four. One, two, three. Four or five different neighborhoods.
And the language, the regulations that we have currently addresses each of those separately. Treating them as distinct parts of the downtown zone, to some degree.
To some degree. There's some guidelines for downtown commercial, which is the entire downtown district. I don't recall if there are specific sign guidelines for each of the neighborhoods in terms of design. I don't recall.
I think it's a great question, Paul, and I look at it along the same line I look at our mixed-use commercial and our mixed-use neighborhood commercial,
right,
which currently have exactly the same standards. And then I think of the downtown area, and we've got the historic downtown area versus the Moreland Park area of the downtown. Do one have the exact same sign regulations on those two neighborhoods? Well, in my mind, there, the Moreland Park neighborhood is going to be much more, at least it's visualized as much more of a mixed-use neighborhood, much like our mixed-use commercial zone, except with a higher residential density. And it's certainly, both of those are different than the historic downtown area. I don't know how we can apply the same standards.
We're going to look into that some more and see just where it lies in terms of how the existing is organized and how it compares to the proposed in this code. And we have the option of, we always have the option of leaving those guidelines in place. So they are problematic in that they are, in some cases, very vague guidelines that are difficult to apply and enforce in the application, as well as in the application or the enforcement of existing or signs that are put up after the fact.
Yeah. Isn't part of what we want to do here, though, is try to avoid as much of that as possible?
Yes.
Jeff?
It was my feeling listening to Tom and, you know, several presentations that he, through his experience, has a pretty good handle on signage in downtown areas, and that what we have now looks like it's pretty applicable to the whole area. If we decided that one area needed a little bit of a tweak, I think he could do that pretty expeditiously. As long as we gave him guidance that, well, this area would want smaller signs or larger signs allowed or whatever the case may be. But it certainly seemed to me that he had a lot of examples of downtown signage and he had a pretty good handle on that concept. So to me, it looks pretty good the way it's written to be applicable over the whole area. But if it needs tweaking, I don't think that would take him a lot of time and effort. But we wouldn't have to then, we'd be faced with drawing boundaries and saying, this is where this ends and this is where this begins.
Boundaries have already been drawn. They're in the downtown plan.
Yeah, but if we get rid of that, the sign code in the downtown plan, then those boundaries, you know, potentially go away.
The boundaries remain because the district's broken into different sub-districts, I can put it that way.
So then you're recommending that we have a separate sheet for each of those five areas?
All I'm saying is I think at least we need to look at the question, and I'm suggesting that they're not the same sort of area, and I don't think I'm suggesting that we don't perhaps want the same sort of end result when it comes to signage. And I don't think that Tom really looked at the code with that in mind. I know he didn't look at it with the, we talked briefly about the mixed-use commercial versus the mixed-use neighborhood commercial. He really hadn't looked at them and the fact that the mixed-use commercial, the mixed-use neighborhood commercial is much more like our old professional office zone than it is a commercial zone. And the mixed-use commercial leans toward the commercial side. And I think there's a distinction there. Certainly as I drive down Main Street, I think I should see that distinction in real life.
Then we would have to remand all this back to him and say, take what's in the downtown commercial code and put it in this format for each separate area. That's the alternative, as I see it.
Some of that's already been done in here because the mixed-use neighborhood and mixed-use commercial are a separate group from the downtown commercial.
But if we're talking strictly about the downtown commercial area and eliminating the sign code from it, or the sign portions of that code, then it's going to have to be brought in here.
Correct, it would, yes.
I don't think there should be two sign codes. I think one sign code should cover the whole town, downtown, or across the highway, or anybody. This patronizing one area to another, I don't think it's better than the beginning. One of the things I can see might cause some problems in downtown is the sandwich board signs, but downtown businesses came to the council and really pushed to have A-frame signs downtown for their businesses. And they allowed it. I don't know if they still allow it. I think we should have just one sign go for the whole city of Monroe. I really do.
Dave, are you suggesting one document that contains the sign standards and requirements, or one set of requirements that are applicable in any zone?
Well, there's going to be a little difference in downtown Monroe because you don't want to hang signs out on the street. I think the sign code is reached out. The signs have to be flush with the front of the buildings. And that would be about the only thing I can say. It'd be different.
So signage code on Highway 2 would be the same as on South Kelsey Street in the residential zone? Or would there be differences?
This should be the same. But, of course, Highway 2 is a state highway.
Well, I remember that when we went through and we did the Main Street rezone for Main Street, all the way, included downtown and West Main. We went through the sign code issues back then, and I know we kind of took into account some of the things that downtown already had, and we went by that. We also went by, you know, input from the public and all that. I would like to somehow, if we could, like in the downtown area, if we could kind of merge some of those ideas together, so there isn't too much confusion, as to, if you take 10 steps, now you're in a different sign code area. If we could somehow get that, I'm not entirely sure how to get there, but if there was some way we could kind of get those merged together so that people can understand, this is the downtown area, whether it's a railroad or whether it's, Main Street or whatever, that we can get that fairly well straightened out. I don't know how you would do it in the table. I think the way Tom has it kind of does it, So I don't really see a problem with the way it's done now. It's just that
right now
there seems to be still some confusion.
Right now the proposed table has downtown commercial zone for signage and doesn't differentiate between the different neighborhoods. And I'm not sure that it does in the downtown guidelines or not at present. But we'll look into that some more and come back with some better information.
Yeah.
The historic guidelines has a very small treatment on signs. I mean, it's
right.
It's small.
Just a few pages.
And the only, it's broken out rails and neighborhood, rails and roads, and then all the rest of the areas are combined in a downtown commercial. And I think that fits the spirit of the down historic plan. We'll take a look at it again. But.
Just a quick note, the rails and roads and neighborhood on the other side of the tracks, signs there is regulated as it is in general commercial. So that is really separate from the downtown in terms of signage. It's kind of highway to front and so forth.
I think that makes sense.
Yeah, I just know that I've talked to some of the businesses in the rails and roads, railroad district here, and they've told me that they really have a hard time trying to get a sign that would help, with their business. So that was one of the neighborhoods I said, well, why is it there's a railroad district and the downtown district, and why can't they kind of be the same, come together? All right.
Well, the other couple were sandwich signs, murals, human signs, and we'll look into this. We'll confirm this minimum maximum ratio of business, but the other thing that we didn't really touch on was human signs and sandwich board signs. Human signs, it doesn't matter whether we want, whether we choose to regulate, and I guess more information on that. But the sandwich signs, that's one issue that I want to raise, because I know there's going to be some pushback no matter what we do or don't do in terms of either the initial, whether they're prohibited or allowed, and certainly in enforcement of A-frames, which can easily get out of hand. And Tom gave some pretty good examples at one of our last meetings. But as I said, they are. This proposed code takes them out of the commercial and industrial zones, keeps them in mixed use downtown in the parks, basically.
Okay.
Would those qualify as the limited duration signs?
They are portable.
That'd be limited.
Meaning temporary.
Temporary.
Yeah.
Limited duration.
Limited duration.
That's what we're called here.
They're called portable signs. I'm sorry, sandwich signs, I believe. Yeah, portable dash sandwich sign.
I'm looking at the tables and trying to figure out where it would be regulated in the table.
I think the first
is in the public zones. Up on the screen, the very first line, portable sandwich sign in the open space zones. And on the next, I believe the next page.
Paul, I got really confused when we talked about permanent signs, and then the first line, it says portable. So I was confused with that right off the bat, and there's a couple of them like that. The downtown zone, general service, no, general service, commercial business didn't have it. Mixed-use neighborhood. Both of them said permanent signs, and then they had a line for portable sandwich signs. And then later on, Tom has the page where temporary signs for all zones. Wouldn't that just cover those where it says portable sandwich sign, and you could remove that from the permanent sign table?
Well, I think what I'm thinking is that the difference is that the portable sandwich signs are used on a permanent basis, on a daily basis. There's no window, let's say a banner you can have for 30 days, or event signs are only good for say 3 days or 5 days, something like that. Whereas the portable sign, you could, the regulations require, it's not enforced, that a business owner remove the sign during off hours. That during business hours, they can place this portable sign. But there's lots of cases where they're up 24/7. But that doesn't make them permanent. But I think permanent in the sense that it's not a sign that's going to be only good for so many days. It's good 365 days a year, as long as you tie it to your business hours.
Okay. But it clears it up for me, but I still think it's a little confusing.
I would concur.
Okay, we'll check in there.
Okay, while we're on the topic of portable signs or sandwich signs or A-boards or whatever we're going to call them, just because of my orientation business-wise, where do real estate open house signs fall in that?
Well, those would be temporary since they are for a...
Page 10.
I'm sorry?
Page 10 of the table.
Right. Under the temporary or limited duration.
Temporary signs also on this very first one.
You know what? I didn't get page 10. I was missing all the even pages in my package that I got. I didn't print out page 10.
You have a new one. Yeah, there was a mistake in
somewhere here.
Here on one side. I should have pointed that out. You have fresh table copies to replace one in the packet.
So we've got temporary signs and we have limited duration signs. So, okay. All right, thank you.
That's kind of where I was getting confused, because you had the temporary sign section here where it had sandwich signs, and then under permanent signs, it still had sandwich signs. I understand, yes, they can have permanent portable sandwich signs.
Right, like a portable, temporary estate sale sign.
Yeah, right.
Could be a sandwich sign.
Right, okay.
As opposed to the open house sign on a stick.
So what you're saying is on a portable sign, they could leave it out there 24/7.
If they're open 24/7.
Now you're making me even more confused.
You're talking about
sandwich
signs.
They have other signs that they leave out. You know, like if it's on their wall, it's a permanent sign on their wall. They don't have to take that down when they close the store.
Right.
So they would have to take the portable sign in if they're closed.
If they're complying with the requirements, yes.
Okay.
They would have to.
Does that say that in the code?
It's in our code now.
I didn't need that detail in there, so. Okay. All right.
Taking that just a step further and going to our definitions, as I look at portable sign and look at temporary sign, it seems like there's an awful lot of overlap. if I understand you correctly, you're talking about portable signs, and it's defined on page 12. A grand opening sign, for instance, might be a limited duration time sign. And yet, the grand opening sign is actually used as an example under the temporary sign for a limited period of time. Perhaps we need to draw a greater distinction between those two definitions. And the temporary sign is defined on page 16. It just, it seems like there's an awful lot of overlap. They both talk about A-board signs. They don't seem, there seems to be a lot of gray area between the limited duration, which is a permitted use or sign for a certain amount of time that's extraordinary to their regular signage, versus a temporary sign that is also for a limited period of time, which could be a temporary limited duration. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
We're getting an awful lot of, I think, crossover in those two definitions that then I think starts to carry over into how one looks at and interprets the table and these two sections.
Came to me like what portable, temporary, limited duration. Yeah, we'll get some clarification on making those distinctly different or collapsing the use of those words somehow.
In my mind, a temporary sign is going to be a one that's one portable and also limited duration.
Correct.
And that becomes problematic. Here. Sorry.
So a portable sign would be a sign that would be associated with a permanent sign that's on a building or something and used on a daily basis, whereas a temporary sign would be of limited duration, not necessarily associated with a permanent business location. Something along those lines, is that?
I think so. A temporary sign is going to be more likely an unpermitted sign, based on what we see in the table here. That's going to be more restrictive in how it's posted and left posted. Is that fair?
Makes sense.
And the definitions would be mutually exclusive so that there is no overlap or confusion.
Right. Even though they're both A-boards.
Yeah.
Okay.
It goes to more to the intent, I think. Not easy, I understand.
Make sure where it could be confusing. You know, a sandwich A-frame sign is a temporary portable sign. So, okay.
And really, we all know what the A-board is. We don't need to say it's either temporary or portable in its description. I don't think.
I think it's really important that we get this portable, temporary thing straightened out, because it's one of the biggest problems we have, from what I've heard in other meetings. This is one of the biggest problems we have, is the A-word sign, or the sandwich sign issue.
We do get a number of complaints about A-word signs, and we have done some enforcement, particularly off-premise A-board signs, where they may be blocks and blocks away from the business, or certainly off the property.
No, just something to add that, and maybe we need to define what limited duration is. It's not in the definitions at all.
I noticed that.
I think that's one that we really got to nail down and make sure that it is enforceable when we do have problems. David?
Continuing on that and going back to my orientation outside here, and that being real estate, sometimes the best way to get to something is through example. I had a piece of vacant land for sale that I put a 4x4 sign on in town here last year.
Did you get a permit?
Huh? I do not. And as I look at the table here, it seems to me that that 4x4 sign mounted on two posts for a limited duration, albeit undefined, wouldn't have fallen under the temporary signs anywhere, and would in fact have fallen under the limited duration commercial lot, perhaps, or residential sale rental, and require a permit. Is that our intent, that that type of sign require permits? Because if it is, then I think the same thing goes to the yell arm that sits in front of the house that's for sale. As I look at the language in this, it seems the only place that an L-arm, which is the most common sort of residential real estate sign, falls would be under a limited duration, under the limited duration table. And as I look at residential sale, it would be a freestanding type of sign that would require a permit and could be up to 9 square feet and 6 feet off the ground. And I think, I'm not sure the city wants to get into permitting residential for sale signs in front of houses.
I don't think so.
I don't see anywhere else that it would fall in this, in these tables. And it's certainly not addressed in the ordinance itself that I could find.
Would that be like a freestanding single pole, the L thing?
A freestanding single pole, isn't that by definition it's a pole that's going to be stuck in the ground?
Yeah, that's what the L sign is.
Right. I don't know that that would be a freestanding sign anymore.
Well, they have it in the temporary signs. It's a like political, private, political. I don't
see it. Where can you point me to where you're talking
on page
about?
10?
Mm-hmm.
On temporary signs.
In the table?
Yeah, in the table.
The political, private?
Yeah.
They
have a single pole, which is a stake. They're stuck in the ground, and you have the political sign that's attached to that.
I think this is talking about a political sign on private property versus a political sign in public property.
No, I'm just talking about the definition of a freestanding single pole versus a, you know, wouldn't that be one of the things that we could have under real estate? As a temporary sign is what I'm saying.
As a solution.
As a solution, yeah. That's
right.
That's where I was
going. I kind of see a problem with that also. If someone was selling a piece of equipment or something, put a sign and do the same thing as the other way, you know, back and forth, doing that. Same as a real estate sign. You got the real estate sign for something for sale. And you could be selling something for sale, you know, and put a sign on there too. If that was, you had to have permit for the, you didn't have to have permit for one, you would have to have permit for the other.
Right. Well, most of these temporary signs are, you know, permit required anyway. But I've seen, you know, really ugly, you know, for sale signs. It would be nice to have, if they're going to put up a for sale sign, to have it a nice for sale sign. Something scraping it, you know, on the side of it. Am I correct? Paul, does a freestanding single pole, would that cover like L real estate sign?
I don't think that would be considered a freestanding. Well, I guess it could be a freestanding temporary sign, or I should say. Back up, a temporary freestanding sign in the definitions on number 39. A freestanding sign is basically a permanent built to code installation of a sign, as opposed to a temporary freestanding sign that are movable, portable. They may be put in the ground but are anchored in some fashion, but they're not permanent in the sense that they don't conform to a building code.
Well, we somehow have to have that covered, and I don't see it. I think Commissioner Demarest is correct. I don't see it anywhere in here where that would be under temporary signs or was it in limited duration?
For the LR?
Yes, yeah.
Did you really mean to have yes for permits for those?
No.
Because right now it says you need a permit for a residential sale freestanding sign.
Right.
So those, as well as commercial sale in a limited duration section, so those should all be no's.
Okay, no, I don't think you'd want to require permits for, certainly not residential sales signs. Commercial signs may be different, that they may be more of a temporary freestanding sign or a much larger structure, like a 4x4 for the vacant land. But okay. We're going to look into real estate sign permitting.
Well, I know that Jeff has some expertise in that area, certainly. I think that one, it would be really tough to regulate from an enforcement perspective unless you just want to start collecting signs. And you're talking about a lot of types of signs that are temporary in nature, albeit in the last few years, somewhat of a long term sometimes, given the market conditions.
Intended to be.
They're intended to be, we hope that they're temporary. If you start trying even to regulate and permit, require permits on say a 4x4 or even a 4x8 on some of the commercial properties that are out there, you're stepping into some pretty deep mud.
We don't want this room full of real estate agents.
Or the Association of Realtors, perhaps. Or the Master Builders Association.
And the other side of the question that I'd like to get you guys' input on is one sign per parcel on the commercial side. If we don't require a permit, but we do say there's only one sign per parcel, is that enforceable? If they put up two, we can go out and ask the realtor to remove one, even though it's not permitted. Thoughts?
Would that be, can we address that in terms of one sign per frontage? Or, like we do other signs, length of frontage? And if there's a split between less than 200 feet and more than 200 feet, that may be a place to consider whether more than one sign is appropriate.
Well, and how many is a different question. My question would be whether it's one or two or five, if a permit's not required, do we still have the ability to enforce the rest of the code language?
Seems to me that you can make a sign exempt up to a certain point or quantity if it's in the language. We do that. Codes historically have for years done that with hay boards on real estate open houses. They've limited this code. Our code here has limited that to 5 hay boards. It's not permitted, but if someone were to complain, and there's certainly been some real estate agents in past years and currently that abuse the heck out of it. They plaster the community with signs and shouldn't be able to. There should be some limitations, absolutely.
Okay, understood.
I think if it's a corner parcel, maybe if to take the CERC building and the industrial park, the Farlands Industrial Park, a sign on each frontage, not unreasonable. Multiple signs on one frontage, probably unreasonable.
Yeah, there's a number of different signs in here that do not require permit, but it does give a number of signs that are, allowed. So. That itself, when they say that itself, if somebody did complain, that you could go say, well, the code does say that, you don't have to have a permit, but we only allow one. I like the idea of one per frontage. You know, if you have a corner lot, you'd like to try maybe catch it on both sides. Just my thought. I'm not a real estate person, but I would like to be able to do that if I could.
I work at one sign code where real estate open house signs consumed probably 2 months. And it opened up as, you know, a perfect storm kind of thing.
Well, I know that we've certainly had master builders and realtors in past years in this chambers on that very topic, and I'm sure they'd be happy to come back.
And this was in a community that was very, very restrictive on signage.
Michael Teal.
I don't think they would be happy.
They would be willing to make the time when they jump.
Yeah, they would.
A lot.
They'd be happy about it. Michael. Okay. Okay, Paul, did we kind of give you on the sandwich thing here, the temporary sign? Some idea of what our thoughts were. Did you understand?
Yeah, I'm in favor of limiting where sandwich signs can go, the zones, so that they do not proliferate around the city. And you know, part of this exercise, too, is that once we do adopt a new code, we think about enforcement. Things like sandwich signs, we may have to give some kind of sunset period to start doing serious enforcement of A-frames, since people may complain that they just spent $300 on this sign and now you're telling them that I can't use it.
Mm-hmm.
But
you do some kind of warning thing so they let you know that you can, you know, do it right now, but there is a time period that you have to stop.
We're going to need to publicize it and, you know, on the web. Maybe do some outreach, maybe through the chamber and so forth, to get the word out that there may be changes coming about.
Wayne?
Yes, we can make the recommendation to council, but how many changes is the council going to make on this? When do we get through?
Yeah, I see it's a real possibility that if you take the sandwich signs away from the Route 2 folks, that they'll hammer on the council pretty hard. There will be pushback on that.
for that matter, Paul, probably anybody that has a sandwich sign, then you tell them they can't have it anymore.
They will find themselves well represented.
Dave?
And I think the issue isn't necessarily so much the sandwich signs, the A-boards themselves, as it is the fact that so many people are leaving out 24 hours a day.
Right.
They don't bother to go get them. And clearly that's an enforcement issue, because I don't think our code allows them to stay out if the business is closed currently.
Correct. Nor can they be off-premise.
Well, and that's a separate issue. The whole issue of off-premise signs is another animal. But I think if it's tied to the business being open, for starters, that's a big step. And maybe a more reasonable step than just saying, no, you can't have it.
Well, I see it as a teachable moment. That if you have someone going out at 2 a.m. and picking up every sign and bringing them down here and putting them in the back room, if you even have a back room left, and they'll come to the police and say, hey, someone stole my sign. Oh, no, we just picked it up because it was out when it wasn't supposed to be. And I believe that the message would be passed along pretty effectively.
Wayne?
I have a good question here on enforcement of these signs. If you have a business that's gone out of business and you enforce them to take the sign down, who takes the sign down?
Building owner, I guess, would be the bottom line. had some comments on the rural monitor sign in on West Main Street. They moved some time ago to the other side of Main Street, you know, the other side of Lewis. That sign should be removed since the business is no longer there. I don't know if it has any particular historic value. Correct. If the business is not there, the sign should be removed. And I believe there's something in here about when a business closes, they don't have to remove the sign, but they have to remove the content. You certainly wouldn't expect them to permanently remove the sign structure every time someone moved out. But certainly the sign face should go blank.
As far as the signs on Highway 2, the A-frame signs on Highway 2, it's certainly confusing to anybody driving down Highway 2. I know myself, there's no possible way I can see all those signs and read them and understand them and know who is what and what is what. It's not very nice looking as far as our community, people driving through our beautiful city of Monroe and seeing all these A boards out there on Highway 2. It's just, to me, it's not how we want that road to be seen. I wouldn't want it to be seen that way.
Well, I perfectly understand a business owner wanting to get an A-frame out, especially if they've just opened, to advertise in business. And, you know, Frylands and Highway 2 and elsewhere. And the problem becomes, as you point out, that there are so many signs, there's so much clutter, that you don't get the message at all. They're defeating themselves by putting out so much signage that it's overwhelming. And you can't, when you're driving, you simply cannot take the time pick out and read all of those signs.
So not safely.
My wife does.
One element that will mitigate the loss of the A boards is the wayfinding for the entire community, so informational, directional.
Right.
And there's money in the budget this year to start that process, $20,000 to hire a consultant to help us with wayfinding, come up with some guidelines on how that should look and the beginnings of standards for. So when you're that little business that's smack in the middle of the Frylands Industrial Park and you're trying to attract somebody there, you can advertise in the Frylands Industrial Park, and somehow the wayfinding signs will guide you to that area, and hopefully from there you can draw your customer to the big box store, whatever it is you're trying to attract to. So,
and that works well because in my previous life, when I was traveling around the world, and you go into business parks or whatever that were like that had the signs that would kind of just guide you into these big complexes of commercial buildings, and you were able to find your way around in there. Not always the first time, but eventually you'd get there. Yeah, that'd be great. Awesome idea.
David? But those won't help, not single out a good business, but as we mentioned before, the Taco Del Mar's of the world.
No.
And I think that's more representative of the sort of problem we have, A-board wise, than the Glacier Boats in the Frylands Industrial Park. Because one, that sort of tenant out there, or owner out there, as the case may be, isn't really looking to pick up that drive-by traffic. Their customers are coming to look for them, and especially the GPSs today, and the iPhones that we have, and every other product that you put an address in, and it tells you how to get there from wherever in the world you are. So I don't know that in itself will negate the concern or the issue that we have driving down Highway 2 or down Main Street, for instance, with the A-boards.
part of the problem we have here in Monroe is that in our industrial park, we have a tremendous amount of retail, churches, you know, service, commercial, in an area that's light industrial, because it goes far beyond things like the kind of manufacturing and so forth. So there are businesses that suffer from lack of visibility. They may be a fourth or fifth suite down in a building perpendicular to the street with very ineffective signage, but that doesn't entitle a business owner to throw A-frames up to direct people to that place of business. Big Box is a good example, but they had just recently opened. You know, they've had A-frames out on the street. My wife actually took me there one day, and I have to say that sounds pretty handy. No word of terms, I didn't know where it was.
Yeah, that's on 147.
Right.
Yeah, over there. Yeah, that's real hard to find some of those businesses in there. I know that for a fact.
Well, in the Highway 2 Taco Del Mar example, again, it comes back to tenant gang signs, the off-premises monument signs that could avail themselves to large areas, you know, Taco Del Mar and North Kelsey. You know, there's the little logo, so at least you're seeing it on Highway 2, up on the big monument sign. You might not see the store right away, but you know it exists right there. So I guess that's one hope to mitigate that. Working with the retail or the large commercial centers to work together as businesses to signage and identify their entire center rather than, you know, every business for themselves. So I think that the sign code is going to start to push the centers to start paying attention to that type of activity.
Start encouraging directories. Directory type signs for complexes. That would make it a lot easier. I think for people who are looking for a certain business as they're driving through town or trying to find a Starbucks. Downtown it's not that hard to find a Starbucks. You can't throw a rock and not hit a Starbucks. David?
But then we get the signs that have 20 businesses identified on them. And I think signs as I drive down Highway 99 or Evergreen Way at Everett, that they're just massive, ugly proliferation of all these tiny little
directory signs
that are all over the place. And I'm not sure that's where we want to be either. I mean, I think of going to the far end of the spectrum, Alderwood Mall. Alderwood Mall has wayfinding signs. They're subtle. They kind of look like our park signs. They're small. They're there. You pick up on them. If you're looking for it, just the eyes pick up on it. But they're very subtle. And I think they're very effective. And I don't think that's what we're talking about here is I read what we've got so far. And that concerns me.
But isn't that two separate things that we're talking about, the wayfinding versus commercial?
Well, one kind of transgressed into the other.
The wayfinding, there's a description of wayfinding in the code and in the table here. But the only reason why it's in the code and in the table there is to indicate that the city has to seek permits from itself for wayfinding signs.
Right.
So we can't go about half-cocked and do it in an odd way. But you're right, Dave, the wayfinding conversation has not taken place yet, and it's going to be very symbiotic with this once it's developed. And I think it will help. They'll work together to make a easier meander through the town. I don't know if we can ever solve Highway 2's problem. Honestly, until the bypass is built and Highway 2 becomes a boulevard of trees down the middle of it in town, it's going to be a challenge.
Well, and I would hope that, one, that happens at some point, and two, when it finally does happen, and I believe it will, we're not stuck with a huge proliferation of ugly signs on the boulevard that are all permitted and grandfathered in.
Right.
Because really, what we're looking at today is going to direct us as far as what we have in the future.
And somebody else can take care of that.
Presumably, you might still live here.
Oh, I don't think so. Okay. Anything else, Paul?
Anything else on the table, at least at this point?
Yeah.
Not for me.
So we want to go into the attachment two.
Mr. Chairman?
David?
When Paul first brought up this discussion, he talked about us not looking at the nuts and bolts of every section in the table, but touching on comments that we might have in the individual sections. Wasn't that right, Paul? And we've kind of touched on your list at this point.
Right.
But we haven't really looked at the... I haven't shared some of the concerns that I have with some of the different parts, and perhaps others have some concerns as well.
Right. That's what I'm looking for.
Bill, that's where I'd like to see us go next.
Yeah, I did touch on some of the things in the table, like the portable signs, them being in the permanent section, and that type of thing. Okay, yeah, I understand that we have other concerns on the table. That's good. Okay.
That didn't mean for that to be the extent of the discussion.
Yeah.
Can we go back to the table?
I'd like to look at the tables a little longer, if you may.
Okay.
And I'd like to start just at the top of the access landmarks, et cetera, all zones. And again, not belaboring square feet and height with a few exceptions. Out of this section, gateway, when I looked at the definition of gateways, a gateway is either a public or a private sign or structure with sign elements identifying, et cetera, et cetera, into a developed neighborhood or district. It seems to me it's a pretty broad definition. And it, especially when I look at it in the context of potentially a 24-foot high gateway sign, which I believe, if I'm reading this right, could also be at the same time an off, and probably would be an off-premise sign. I'm just wondering if that, thinking down the road, if it's too broad, too loose, especially given that maybe there hasn't been enough work yet put into the whole concept of what a gateway is. But I have a concern there. I don't know. Maybe no one shares it.
The way I read this is that this is, I almost call it a monument sign that is identifying the development, the neighborhood, the district, like North Kelsey. It might be a sign that simply says North Kelsey Shopping District to identify the entryway, the various entrances to that district, but it doesn't call out, it's not a directory sign.
I understand that. Not to belabor the dimensions, but would we want such a sign to be potentially 24 feet tall along Highway 2, which is where I would envision that it might be? Or would it be more of a wayfinding type sign of some sort that's much more subtle and just says, hey, North Kelsey's this way, North Kelsey Commercial Center? So I think that's an issue that needs to be developed further, and I think we need to proceed carefully on it.
I remember the North Kelsey Theater wanted to put a sign right on Highway 2 pointing towards their establishment because when the leaves came on the trees on the highway there, you couldn't see the theater. When it, on the water line, you could see it all over Highway 2. And they were concerned about that. I don't know whether they still are.
That would be more like a wayfinding point to a theater.
There might be a potential for some kind of off-premise signage, say along Highway 2, that might list what I'll call the more anchor uses, like Galaxy Theater, Lowe's, but not, you know, the Emerald City sub shop, because maybe the major users, that's a potential for a sign. I would do that. A limited number of tenants, if you will, or businesses listed on a directory sign. But I think that's different from a, what's intended, is it? Or is it different from a gateway sign?
How are you going to tell one business that they can be on that sign and another one can't?
Somebody's going to own it.
It's going to own it.
Right.
It's out of the city.
It's out of the hands of the city. But so what we would do would be to allow an off-premise sign to be placed, maybe within private property, on the corner of Highway 2 in North Kelsey, for example, to put a off-premise sign that might advertise businesses that are off of Highway 2.
So I could go out and buy that sign, right, and sell space on that sign to businesses within the park.
Good, sure.
That'd be the name of the city, damn sign.
I'm a little confused now. Would that be a gateway sign or would that be a directory?
Well, you know, a directory sign like that could also certainly function as a gateway in the fulfill the purpose of a gateway sign as it's defined, because it would identify North Kelsey Shopping District. But then it goes further to this directory sign to identify individual businesses. But the way I read the gateway signs, it is identifying the area, the you know, Franklin Industrial Park, yeah, or North Kelsey Shopping Center, but not specific businesses.
I think that, Dave, what you were kind of trying to say is that should be a little more specific, because right now it looks,
I think so.
It's too general, and it could end up being a big directory sign with 20 businesses on it.
And I think Paul's absolutely right. And then we go from an effective sign to get someone passing through into an area versus garbage. And I don't mean to offend the sign makers, but confusion and visual garbage. And I think, right, you know, we've got enough of that in places around town already. And we can see where it can go if we look at other communities. And I don't think that we want to go there.
And I think some of that might be addressed in the sign design guidelines, that to minimize the clutter, at least to show as examples of do at least as good as this example or better.
Yeah. But they're only guidelines, Paul.
Good. I like the idea of the gateway signs, you know, are nice, that, you know, have a nice brick wall or rock wall or whatever. It says this is the, you now coming into this area or this.
It's like a monument sign entering a subdivision.
Right, yeah. But being 75 feet wide and 24 feet high is
75 square feet.
Well, 75 square feet, 24 feet high. That's pretty high.
But I think the reason the 24 feet is there is to separate it from all the other signs that are shorter, which says, okay, now this is different. You know, yeah. We're addressing an area. One thing that to me is a little confusing after having gone through our previous discussions, although nascent as they were, about the city gateways, and then this has a different meaning from that.
Mm-hmm. So, and they're not community identification signs. That would be under wayfinding, the city's program and construction and so forth, identifying Monroe, but not North Kelsey or Providence. If nothing else, we can take our new logo and get it out on the street.
Yeah.
I think, though, that Jeff, you're absolutely correct. The context of the term is dramatically different than what it was when it was introduced to this commission some months ago and was put on, I believe, next year's work, this year now, work study, as far as gateway neighborhoods coming into the town from the different directions. Totally different concept.
Different. It's not commercial.
Well, it's not community. I think that was a word that you used.
It's just the same word, Dave. Don't get hung up on the same word.
Yeah.
It's the same word used in two totally different. We're talking about gateway zones and gateway signs here. Can be applied to multiple. You got to separate your planning commission hats here and realize that we're talking about gateway signs versus gateway zones.
Okay. That was my only comment or comments. Those were my only comments in that section. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else?
As far as the next section, permanent signs, residential zones?
Do you want to go section by section?
I would.
Okay.
And I think when we met 2 weeks ago, was it 3 weeks ago? 2 weeks ago. I suggested that really we needed to look at this. And again, not getting into all the specific nuts and bolts of the, all the measurements, all the dimensions, but just general concerns or issues.
Okay, let's go on to permanent signs and residential signs.
I think the one size thing that does come to mind here, the home occupation size on a sign, I think we want to look at whether we really want to have an 8-foot high sign for a home occupation in a residential zone. And then also the distinction that we have in a residential complex between the gateway, which is here a monument, versus the freestanding entry sign. For a complex, I'm not sure what the difference would be. We've got two very different signs size-wise, and in the comments, but really, is a residential complex going to have both a gateway and an entryway type of sign? So I think maybe a little clarification effort in that regard.
What would be the difference between a gateway and an entry?
I say the specifics, but I don't know if you're right.
Yeah.
Okay. So no.
Okay. Anything else for you?
Not in that section.
Me? Jeff? Okay, public zone, permanent zone?
I think that the off-premise sign issue needs more discussion. If we're going to have off-premise signs, I think that an off-premise sign, in my mind, shouldn't be a pole sign, as an example. I know that in the language it says monument preferred. It's nice to say that, but obviously in the application of it, it doesn't carry much weight, at least not in my mind. And when we talk about adjacent arterial or collector road, is that adjacent as to next to the property, or is it the closest, or do we need to worry about how that's defined or what it actually means? Adjacent to me says next to it.
To me it says the property abuts an arterial or and or a collector.
I think, yeah, that would mean that the road that is adjacent to the property that wants the off-premise sign.
Correct.
So I'm not sure that that's really the intent of what we're trying to say there if we actually do want off-premise signs. So I think it needs to be looked at further. Jeff, can you shed any light on that?
On why we would want off-premise signs?
On what it means when we say that we can have an off-premise sign. One off-premise sign on the adjacent arterial or collector road.
Well, what it says is you can only have an off-premise sign if it is adjacent to an arterial or a collector road, you can't stick it out on a end of a cul-de-sac. So that's what the limitation is there. The arterial collector road is the limitation.
So adjacent doesn't have anything to do with the thing you're saying?
Well, the property would have to be frontage on in a collector or arterial.
And we call it frontage. If you have arterial frontage, if the property has arterial frontage, it's eligible potentially for a off-premise sign.
That's the way I read that.
If it's an arterial intersecting with a collector road, I may have the ability to do a off-premise sign on each one.
So is it across the street, perhaps, on a neighbor's property? Or
it could be a proliferation of off-premise signs.
Well, keep in mind, this is the public zones.
Well, but it's repeated in subsequent
sections.
It is. Yeah. And I can refer you to...
You're going to have to own the property in order to place the sign on it. So that's the key component here. You know, there has to be ownership in order for you to place a sign on that off-premise. So if the city, for instance, wants to put a sign out at the corner of Frylands and Highway 2 that tells people when the city council meets, you know, when the parks department's going to have their hoopla, they would have to find a proper zone on a collector or an arterial of a piece of property they owned or had permission to place a sign on, say the school district owned the property. They could then place the sign at that location and it would be permitted. And it boggles my mind why a multi-tenant sign would come up, but I think that would come into play. Valley General has talked about that. The school district's talked about it, where you may have a co-location of a sign that maybe the school district and the fire district and the city council, the city all share and put different messages on, perhaps. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll check in the...
Thank you.
All off-premise signs.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. The monument preferred statement is kind of like a note says, it doesn't hold any water, in other words.
Well, I think what the monument preferred is helps. Remember, we have sign guidelines.
Yeah.
And it gets us away from that monolith that Bridgestone Firestone was going to have to build out in North Kelsey. So, in other words, monument preferred indicates that there's discretion. You're guiding the owner rather than on off-premises signs. I would rather be a little more restrictive than permissive. But
that language isn't exactly of that sort.
Yeah, when you go to the definition of monument, you have to understand what that means too. So, that.
Actually, a monument sign is attached, the base is attached, grounded to the ground, to the ground plane. It's not on posts or a pole or a leg, it's a solid surface.
Right.
That was the unintended consequence of the 22 foot wide by 35 foot high sign. A 35 foot high sign that had to be a monument sign. And it could be 22 feet wide, which means no matter what height it is, if it's 22 feet wide, then that's from ground to the very top. all the things, everybody can flash light on top.
The only comment I had in permit signs for the office zoning related to size, I won't go with that at this point.
Anything else on public?
No.
Office zoning? Is the next one?
Nothing to show.
It also has the off-premise.
Correct.
Anything on that?
I'm just trying to find the beginning here.
No.
Page three.
The only, the one comment on size I have is multiple tenant up to 120 square feet, which, and I know it's tied to building frontage. It seems like for professional office zone, it's getting pretty big, but that's just my opinion. 10 by 12 is pretty substantial size sign.
Talking about the total.
No, I'm talking about.
It
would be the 120 on the wall, multiple tenant. So a 80 foot building, 80 foot of frontage could have 120 square feet of signage on the wall.
Correct. Question is 120 too much?
Yeah, and it's a very subjective question.
Okay. Get some response.
Pardon?
We'll get some response on that. Okay.
Downtown zone? Except for rails and roads.
The only thing that I highlighted were the, again, the size of wall signs in both the single and multi-tenant zone. Downtown zone, it's, traffic is slow moving. Granted, the buildings tend to have less frontage, but I think on some buildings that 100 square feet of wall sign could end up being a pretty big sign for as close an area as that is. And everything's close to the downtown zone. And then the same discussion, the same questions on the off-premises sign. And Jeff, you commented that someone would have to own the place where the off-premise goes, but then you changed that a bit and then said, or at least have access to and control over in some form. And then Paul, you commented about proliferation. And I could see where, if we're not careful, we could lend ourselves to a lot of proliferation of off-site signs, off-premises signs, that in turn could lend itself to its own form of confusion and clutter. And I think we really need to be careful with the whole concept. This city has avoided that for years. And being past administrations, I think, have felt pretty strongly about staying away from the off-premises signs for those reasons. I think it, perhaps if we were to look at, or if you could bring some feedback as to how other cities have handled that issue, and I'm not talking about wayfinding signs, I'm not necessarily talking about gateway signs to a district, but rather off-premises signs for individual businesses.
Right.
There's a footnote there, footnote J, that helps.
Yeah, I was looking at that and trying to wade through it, Jeff. Can you... So it must be a business that doesn't have our arterial street frontage. And then there's got to be extenuating circumstances. Could that be hard to enforce?
Yes, it seems that almost anyone could plead that case.
It's pretty broad
in terms of visibility and people being able to identify, see and identify and get to their business.
Paul, you mentioned the example earlier of the business at the end of the long street off of the arterial. and the business chose to go down there, and then now they come back and say, but I've got a hardship.
Yes.
And that building has 10 tenants in it, and they all want to have, you know, an off-premise sign. Give it to one, you have to give it to all of them. All of a sudden, now we've got this off-premise sign that has all these businesses listed on it.
Right, and that's a little easier to address, since that's really a problem of their own making, and that I chose to locate my business here, obviously, because I could afford the rent, or it was the best space for me. But I did not choose to rent where I had the visibility.
Right.
So it's a, we can't possibly give every business in town specific signage and directions so that I can find my way there no matter where they're located. That's impossible.
And yet, theoretically speaking, this opens the door to that, doesn't it?
To some extent, it does. If you're not careful about how it's controlled in terms of the size and what's on that sign and the proliferation of those signs. I don't think we've seen anything yet, but DOT was going to install, I believe, start with two standard DOT business signs, like food, lodging, on Highway 2 in, I believe, two intersections. But I don't drive down Highway 2 very often, but I can't see, I've noticed those. Those would have up to six spaces where any business could, if you got in line, could rent one of those squares for their logo. And we see them on the interstates all the time.
Well, I think in many ways those, one, they're consistent in appearance and size and color, and they almost become more directional in nature, wayfinding in nature, than they are advertising. And maybe it's a pretty great distinction.
A lot of rely more on graphics or logos than they rely on written words.
Yeah. Anything else?
The only comment, not on that, no.
Okay.
The only comment I had on the mixed-use, neighborhood commercial, mixed-use commercial, I've already made as far as differentiation between the two, recognizing the mixed-use neighborhood commercial is more like a professional office zone in its leaning, whereas the mixed-use commercial is more like a commercial zone in its leaning. And I think there is a distinction, certainly the way we develop the sub-area, and I would hope that I drive down, as I drive down Main Street through town, I would see a distinction in the type of signage that could be applied.
Just a note, Paul, under the column number of signs, the second one down, window 08, it says BA. I assume that it should be NA.
I assume so.
Because I don't see a definition for BA anywhere.
And the other, thank you. The other concern I would have in there was the last two, the freestanding signs, which to me are sounding an awful lot like billboards. The 240 square foot or 300 square foot, and I realize that that's a maximum, I believe.
Yeah.
But still, you get a 35 foot sign height that's that kind of square footage. It's pretty glaring. It's a big sign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when her parcel is contiguous with at the 5.2 Main Street intersection, which is a community gateway. And we also call it out for the intersection of 5.2 and Highway 2.
Well, but that wouldn't be under
this in general commercial.
Right, different zone.
Or commercial zones.
Mm-hmm. And so we look at that mixed-use commercial, we could have a 300 square foot multi-tenant sign and another 180 square feet of signage on that particular site. When we look at the total multi-tenant signage on the next page.
Yeah.
It would be interesting to know what kind of signage the Chevrolet dealer has down there, just to give us some perspective. Or the Dodge dealer, I think they're both really well signed. And I have no idea what sizes are that are involved there.
Actually, both corporate entities have come back to both dealerships and said bigger signs, higher than here, because of the 522 expansion. When you're driving southbound on 522 in the new lanes, the way it's set up right now, you almost won't be able to see the speedway sign. And as you drive northbound on 522, you won't be able to see the rear sign going the other direction, because your sight plane is different with the four lane versus two lane road. So this is really a specific piece of code that was written to help those two dealerships out with their signage. 522 drive by is very, very important to both businesses.
Anything else?
No, but actually, I misstated something here. There is no apparently cumulative maximum signage for the MUNC and MUC zones. What I referred to is actually on page 7 and is tied to the general service commercial zones. So is that an oversight? Should there be totals in the MUC and MUNC, Paul? Every other section seems to have totals.
We have monument signs for single and multi tenant.
But every other section has the last two lines, they have total single and total multi tenant, with the exception of this section.
Oh, yes.
So, okay. Maybe it was just an oversight.
Might be total single and total multi.
So if I could go back to the gateway off-premises single multi-tenant concept a little bit. When the sign committee first got together, the vision was to allow for off-premises signs for gateway monument type signs only. That was the original premise of the sign committee. So that's to talk about North Kelsey at the top, the logo on it, underneath Walmart, Lowe's, Galaxy Theater, Five Guys Burger, Fred Meyer. That might be the list of signs on that off-premise monument sign. So that was the original sign committee's thrust, and it looks like Tom maybe has gotten a little farther out on the limb with the off-premises sign, so we'll have that conversation with Tom and try to dial that back a little bit, because I agree the off-premises stuff can get out of control real quick.
Industrial?
Is that next, or is it general service commercial?
No, that's me, just one.
86 is general and
it's service there. Commercial.
Right.
No, I thought we just did that. Oh, sorry. Got it in myself. Okay, general commercial.
Which does include the rails and roads neighborhood in downtown.
By that inclusion being in parentheses there, does that then disinclude, is that the word, disinclude, Borland Park neighborhood?
Borland Park is under downtown commercial.
It would just, for okay, signing. All right, thank you, I'm sorry. One comment on the wall single tenant. The comment is lesser of 1.5 square feet per one lineal foot of building frontage.
lesser of what?
Good question.
My other two comments, one we've already talked and talked enough about, was the off-premises issue, and the other is just the overall height of signs. And Jeff, I appreciate the comment about the car dealers, for instance, down next to 522, and the difficulty posed perhaps by the change in elevation of that roadway. But I don't necessarily think that bigger and taller is always the answer. And it seems to me that 35 feet is a pretty tall sign. And I think it's, we don't have any signs in town that are probably that high. Maybe the Les Schwab sign, which is rather old, but certainly we've seen some effective advertising, I think, from signage with lesser signs. I think the Denny's is a pretty good example of that. They took a very conservative approach on their signage, and I think did a very nice job of it. And yet I think that if we tell them they can do it, there will be those that will. And so I think we need to be really careful on that.
We'll get some feedback on that from Tom.
Part two of that, yeah.
Any more on the agenda? Okay, industrial districts.
I think we've already touched on my comments as far as the size of signage and again the off-premises. I'll leave it at that.
Also, the single tenant still has the same statement. It says 1.0 square feet. That was a good catch.
Thank you.
Anything else on industrial? All right. Limited duration. All zones.
We already had lots to talk about that.
Yes, I think we did.
I don't have anything else to add to it.
Paul?
No.
Yep. You know? Okay. Temporary signs? All zones?
Same comments for me.
On page 11, hold you on to 11 yet?
Yeah, the notes.
Yeah. Under G, it should be 149th Street and 147th Street. Under L, event signs are not allowed on public property of buildings. That's nonsensical. I just assume that's a typo. And the end of L, provided there is no visibility obstruction and the abutting owner's permission has been granted. Legally, the abutting owner has no exclusive say on what happens on the abutting right-of-way because they don't have a motive that will necessarily be a problem, but that language might be problematic from that standpoint.
Okay.
And down under P, there's this orphan six toward the end of the paragraph.
Yeah. Okay. Jeff, going back to G for a minute, your comment again was what?
49th Street. I think those are streets.
They are streets. 149th and 147th would be streets.
The avenues would be north-south
or somewhere. Well, the avenues are north-south.
Yeah, but if they were 149th, they would be 30 blocks to the west out in the middle of the agricultural area. So those are our streets.
Anything else on the notes?
just put that six in there and see if anybody read it.
Didn't work. I tried to do it.
Evidently gifted, so.
We need to vote to extend unless, okay. I don't think we're getting.
I'll entertain a motion to extend.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Sherwood to extend meeting past 9 o'clock, seconded by Commissioner Demarest. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Can I suggest a quick break?
Sure. Sure. Keep it five minutes or so.
Just this.